Hello and welcome to another Transfer Pod special edition of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
It's finally over. The transfer's been completed. Henrik Mkhitaryan and Alexis Sanchez have traded stadiums. Sanchez is now a Manchester United player. Mkhitaryan is now a Gunner. So with the deal finally completed, I know we've talked about it a lot lately. I guess what's your final thoughts, takeaways, moving on for the rest of the season concerning Mickey and Sanchez?
I mean, this is definitely a good move for both of them. Overall, United definitely got the better of this deal because they offloaded someone who was barely a squad player for them in exchange for a top-notch forward.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for MLS, Martial, Lukaku, and Sanchez. That's going to be an amazing
attack.
Too bad
Martial won't be playing.
In an ideal world, I think that's the lineup, that attacking lineup that Mourinho would trot out. I don't know what he's going to do.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's Mourinho. So it's more likely than not that you're going to see something weird because you're basically going to see a combination of like Martial, Rashford, and Lingard all fighting for one spot.
Yeah, so I mean, Lingard's been playing great, so it's hard for him to be dropped right now. But from my opinion, from a combination, more so I guess from a United standpoint, United supporter standpoint, I don't see why you wouldn't put your three most talented attackers out there.
Because
I get
Mourinho.
Lingard's been in form. So I guess if you were in Mourinho's shoes, would you be sticking with form or would you be just looking at from a pure talent standpoint?
I mean, if I was in Mourinho's shoes, a lot of things would be different with the Manchester United setup. So I would start Martial, but that doesn't mean that he will.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming Sanchez is going to come in with the promise that he's going to be playing week in and week out, and that's something that even though as good as he is, Manchester City probably wasn't going to offer him. And I'm assuming he's going to go right in on the left, being that's his preferred side. Do you see a situation where he gets put on the right at all?
No, you're probably right that he's going to end up being put on the left, and because if he's not on the left, then he's going to like somehow be in like a floater role underneath. But I don't see Mourinho altering the entire system to fit Sanchez in.
So I'm going to give you two possible lineups. Tell me what you like better. Obviously, Lukaku with Sanchez, Lingard, and Martial in behind. And then Lukaku with Sanchez, Pogba in a more advanced role, and Martial on the right.
I'd rather have an actual front three of Martial, Lukaku and Sanchez than them playing behind, because you want Paul Pogba on the left side of a three-man midfield.
What about sticking with the thought of Lukaku being the lone guy up top, Martial on the left, Lingard on the right, and putting Sanchez kind of in a central role where he's allowed to float?
I mean, Lukaku hasn't been the greatest lone guy up top because he can kind of get lost up there. So it's a lot better if you have Sanchez supporting him, and especially adding in the fact that Martial also has license to cut in.
Okay, and one more before we move on. Zlatan Ibrahimovic with Sanchez supporting on the left and Lukaku supporting on the right. Any interest in that?
Absolutely not. at this point, I don't even know why Zlatan renewed his contract and didn't just come to MLS.
Well, I think the big reason is he wants to win Champions League, and
he ain't going to do it with United.
Hey, I'm just saying now, looking at that move, I like that brunt of the attack across two legs against most clubs in Europe, except PSG.
Okay.
I guess not to neglect our Arsenal fans, Arsenal supporters listening to this pod, we'll give them some light now. I think Mkhitaryan, I had a real love-hate relationship with him during his brief stint at United. I think he kind of got maybe a little bit more flack than he should have. I think he fits in well moving to the Emirates, just with how they play. Do you think this is a good move for them, or do you think this was kind of just we were going to lose Sanchez and this is the best we were going to get from him at this point?
Yeah, it's tough because while it's a good move for Arsenal, it's also not enough. Like for them, losing Sanchez, unless they replace Sanchez with another star, they're gonna take a giant step back no matter who comes in.
Does so now, I mean, with Arsenal, I don't think either of us really see them mounting a resurgence and finishing in the top four. Do you think this move has anything to do with setting them up to make sure they win the Europa League rather than really battling back in the Premier League?
I mean, this isn't even enough for them to win the Europa League. Considering the teams that dropped out of Champions League, I'm not even sure if I'd put Arsenal in my top five for Europa League contenders right now.
So if you look at the lineup they used against Crystal Palace, it was Lacazette, Iwobi, Ozil in the attacking section with Xhaka, Wilshere, and Elneny in holding midfield. Where do you see Marcia, or sorry, where do you see Mkhitaryan coming in and playing? Do you think he's going to be used out wide? Do you think they're going to change the formation at all?
I assume that he's going to come in straight for Iwobi and go back to the standard Arsenal two floaters in the midfield.
So sticking with kind of the 4-3-3-ish, I guess.
Yeah, because Wenger doesn't seem to have much interest in changing that.
And I guess before we move on, is there any, I guess, is there any X factor about this deal that maybe we hadn't focused on? Do you think that with Sanchez maybe coming in with making so much money, it might ruffle some feathers in the United dressing room? Or do you think that maybe on the flip side, that this is the move that'll kind of reignite Mkhitaryan's career? I guess since all the storyline we focused on is really just how it's going to be for Sanchez at United.
I mean, if Pogba was actually a selfish player, then I'd feel like this would ruffle some feathers at United just because of the fact that he's no longer the highest paid player at United. But at this point, I don't believe that it'll really have that much of an impact on other people. It'll just be interesting to see who's pushed to the bench and how they respond.
Yeah, and it'd also be interesting to see, you know, what happens moving into the future. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of a ripple effect. I mean, I could see probably City maybe signing a defender in the window now, just with this move done, and Sanchez obviously off their radar because now he's at United. But I guess any final thoughts before we finish up our almost mini documentary on the whole Sanchez saga?
As I've said for a couple of weeks and did myself, by Lacazette.
Moving on to another top half club who made a transfer recently. Aaron Lennon has joined Burnley from Everton, trading from the ninth place club, moving up to eighth with the Claretts. The Claretts also just inked an extension for manager Sean Dyche. And they're getting, you know, former Taunton Everton winger who's got, you know, experience at the top of the table. What do you think about this move?
I mean, I personally like Aaron Lennon, but he's such a one-dimensional player because the one thing that he brings is pace and not much else.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed a foregone conclusion that with Theo Walcott moving to Goodison Park, any chance Lennon had at, you know, breaking the 1,500, getting close up to 2,000 minutes mark was going to be kind of put to bed. So I guess he moves on to Burnley. I mean, they already got Scott Arfield out wide, and they already brought in Kevin Georges and Kudu from Tottenham on loan. Do you see this as a signing to fortify the depth chart and challenge Arfield for playing time, or do you see this as them looking, I guess, to next season and hoping that they can have, I guess, his veteran presence around come 2018-19?
Yeah, I think this is more just adding to the depth chart just because of the fact that they really don't have much depth and another injury right now and Burnley's cooked.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, they lost Robbie Brady, and that was a big loss. looking at the Wyatt options, they said you have Georges Kevin from on loan, and then you have Gudmundsson Berg, who's pretty much a nailed-on starter now, been their best player of late. And then really, it's only our field in terms of outside midfielders that offer anything going forward. I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens. I don't see him getting a ton of time. Like, I wouldn't really go out and add him in fantasy, but I could see him playing enough minutes to be a viable part of that first team. From an FPL perspective, are you interested at all in Aaron Lennon?
I'm interested in watching him. That's about it.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of other options out wide, they do have Kevin Walters on the books, but he'd struggled through with injury this season, and you would expect that once he is fit, he'll be operating more as a forward rather than out on the wing, just at the age of 34. I said good move bolstering depth, but I don't think this is really going to be one if Burnley finished in the top half where they say this was the turning point in their season.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Burnley doesn't finish in the top half anyway, but that's just more due to other teams in the bottom half finally finding their form.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, I think the bigger signing to come out in the past 48 hours was them inking Sean Dyche to an extension. He's penned under contract until 2022 now. And I think no matter who comes in now, he's really what they need to stay, relevant in the Premier League.
Just unfortunately, contracts mean nothing nowadays. It just means that they'll get more compensation if he does leave.
I don't see him leaving now at this point. I mean, I hope he doesn't. Just
We.
because I feel like, I mean, we've talked about this off air a bunch, and I think at some point we'll probably have a section dedicated to it. But if you look at the places where he could go or where he could land, I don't think any of them are better suited for success with, I guess, less to lose than him staying at Burnley.
You're not tempted by the ability of Sean Dyche managing your United squad?
That's interesting to think about just because I love Sean Dyche and we both have the same first name. We both spell it the proper way, Sean. But I don't know. I mean, it's been such a turntable that I feel like we just need to stick with Mourinho for as long as we can and then we'll figure it out. He's a budding, he's a, the problem is, I don't think he would bring enough of an attractive style to keep the United supporters happy if we didn't, immediately challenge for a title.
Yeah, the thing is there's you sticking with Mourinho, but are you sure Mourinho wants to stick with you?
Yeah, kind of like a it's not me, it's you thing. But I just don't know anyone else. I haven't looked enough out there to say that's the kind of manager I would want to come in. He's got the right tactical mindset, the right head on his shoulders for me to be at least content with him. If the goals aren't flying in and success isn't following him.
Fair.
Moving on to somebody who Brighton are going to hope is going to bring some goals following his move, Jurgen Locadia has joined for 14 million from PSV Eindhoven. The Dutch import comes to having scored 9 goals, 6 assists in 15 Eredivisie appearances this season. Is he brought in your opinion, Chuck, to compete with Glenn Murray, or just based upon the price tag, you think he's going to be immediately pushed into the starting 11?
I think he'll definitely compete. The thing is just because the longer that they rely on Glenn Murray, the more likely they are to get burnt by over-reliance on Glenn Murray. I'm just not really sure how much of an impact he'll actually have.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton, the Seagulls have obviously struggled for goals this season. They've scored 17 in 24 matches, which is the second worst attack, slightly above Swansea. I mean, Murray is their top scorer right now, but that's really not saying a ton, considering if you look at his return so far this season, I believe he has 4 goals in 22 appearances. six goals in 22 appearances, and then Pascal Gross is the next guy.
Yeah, it's not like he's setting the world on fire.
I mean, I guess he comes in, I guess, with known for having some struggles with injuries. Is there anything else? I guess, is this a signing that excites you?
Not really. I think it's an intriguing signing just because due to his injuries, he's never really had the ability to show his true potential. But also bringing an injury risk into the physical Premier League, and also given the lack of success that Dutch imports have had recently in the Premier League, it's not really one that I can get too excited about.
Yeah, if I had to put a label on it, I don't know where he, on a scale of, you know, like Vincent Janssen to Robin Van Persie's, I have no idea where he's going to land. I mean, he's talented, he's younger, so I mean, there's a chance for him to grow, and if Brighton can stay up this season, I mean, I guess maybe he's someone for them to build on moving forward. He's only 24 right now, so I mean, he's got time, but I guess this was a move that they needed to make. I mean, they need to make goals. I mean, they need goals from somewhere, and they can't rely on Murray forever. He's 34, and he stayed relatively healthy this season. But, I mean, if they were to lose him, I mean, I don't really see where the goals would come from.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I am a Hemed fan, but I'm not really sure that he's the guy that you want to be trotting out weekly anyway either.
Yeah, he's scored two goals in he's played about 900 minutes. I mean, he's also up there in age, though. He's 30, so, and he's struggled with injuries this season. And then in terms of other attacking options, I mean, you have Jose Izquierdo and Anthony Knockaert on the wings, but neither of those guys are out-and-out strikers.
Yeah.
I guess if you were in search of a third forward for Taga leagues, would you be interested in using a waiver claim?
Nope, because I'm actually currently in that position, and I'm just going with two forwards.
Yeah, I guess even if you're in a 12-team league?
I guess it depends on how your waivers run. Like, if you have at least, like, the sixth waiver in your league in a 12-team league, I wouldn't use it on him.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say if you're already towards the back end, you're like 10, 11, or 12.
Yeah, at that point, it really doesn't matter.
You could, in point, you're only going to drop back one or two spots at worst. So, I mean, he's somebody I guess you could think about if you need to catch lightning in the bottle, considering there probably won't be too much competition to pen his name from the rest of your league, unless there's someone out there who's knows something that we don't know. Yep. Or the rest of the FPL community knows, for that matter.
He's currently free in our ultra-competitive 12-team league.
Yeah, I have a feeling he's probably going to stay there for a bit. Moving on to somebody who is a little bit more of an intriguing option, Stoke City have acquired Kostas Stafalidis on loan from FC Augsburg from the Bundesliga, who I guess we're thinking is going to come in and compete with Eric Peters for time at left back, although the Greek international does have the tools to feature in a more advanced position. Is this somebody you're thinking about maybe making a move for, just considering Peters has been kind of the nailed-on left back for the Potters for quite some time without real potent competition?
I'd be watching it, just as I'm actually watching the entire Stoke City defense right now. Like, I'm the biggest Kurt Zouma and Jack Butland supporter, but I can't really justify owning two Stoke defenders. So for me personally, I don't know if I'd bring him in, but I do think that he'll be worth the watch if he can steal the job.
Yeah, I mean, he comes in, it's Peters, and then they have youngster Josh Tymon. He's 18, though. I mean, I have a feeling that if Kostas can, I guess, make a splash since it's a loan, they could be potentially looking to bring him in on a permanent if they're looking for somebody maybe to be the left back of the future. He's only 24 years old, while Peters is 29. He does have 22 appearances for the Greek national team, so he does have some international experience. But then again, this season in the Bundesliga, he had been limited to 2 appearances, so he had been riding the pine for Augsburg. I guess it's an upgrade just because Stoke and Paul Lambert need some sort of a spark to stay up. They're out of the relegation zone now after their win over Huddersfield Town. But, yeah, I mean, from a fantasy standpoint, he's definitely a punt.
Yes. That's kind of just summing up the theme of this episode so far.
Yeah, it's literally the punters program. Moving on to another team who signed a defender. Injury-plagued Crystal Palace have brought in Jaroslaw Jacz, Polish center back, for cover with Scott Dan and Sacco both sidelined. Don't know too much about him. He did make his debut for the Polish international team last November and has 2 caps since then. What are your thoughts on him, Chuck? Do you know any more about him?
Well, I know a little bit about him just because he was actually linked to the Philadelphia Union earlier this offseason, but his price tag was just way out of our range, and at the reported $3.5 million that he went to Crystal Palace for, there's no way that any MLS team should spend that on a center back. He seems relatively strong, but struggles with his positioning. But being under Roy Hodgson, his positioning should be cleared up. It'll be interesting to see how he adjusts to the Premier League, though.
Yes, I mean, he's coming in, presumably, once he's match ready, to partner James Tompkins in central defense. I've already a little bit skeptical about Crystal Palace defenders just because they've been, you know, almost Jekyll and Hyde with how the defense has performed. The only guy I kind of like is Patrick Van Aanholt just because I have a personal crush on him and he has the attacking potential. You know, this is one of those moves where come this summer, I think most people, do you think it'll be one people forgot about, or people go, oh, that was a nice under-the-radar move by the Eagles?
I mean, I think it'll be one that's forgotten about just because by the summer they'll have Sacco back and they'll be back to their normal center-back partnership, because I don't really see him having much value for them long-term. It's literally just they need a center-back to help get them through right now.
Yeah, and I guess the one upside of him is he is 6'4", so he will be a bigger body in the box, which will help them out, especially after the onslaught from Arsenal over the weekend. Moving on to another defender who's trading clubs, Kennedy has signed with Newcastle on loan from Chelsea. Now, Kennedy is someone that people have been excited about for a while, which is why I was very surprised to notice that since 2013, he's only made 46 senior appearances. Now that's across with the majority of those coming in the Serie A before he made his move to Chelsea. He did spend 2016-17 on loan at Watford, but he only managed 1 appearance. What are your thoughts on Kennedy? Because, as I said, I was surprised to notice that he really does not have that much, you know, senior appearances under his belt, even though he's been at Chelsea for almost 3 years now.
This and literally anything involving Newcastle right now is tough, because Rafa Benitez is kind of up the stream without a paddle right now, being that Kennedy has been their only add during the January window when they need help. He's worth a punt just because Newcastle doesn't really have any good options at left back, so he'll probably get a shot. But, like, do you really want to trust anyone on that team?
Yeah, so, I mean, the interesting thing, I saw some quotes earlier in the window from Benitez that pretty much talked about how with Paul Dummett had returned from injury, and he was all excited about that because he is a natural left back who's got a good left foot on him, which is something they didn't have in Javier Manquillo when he was covering before. Although Dummett's not even, he's not a real fantasy option. I mean, he's a workable left back. So I guess Kennedy comes in. He's got a good left boot on him. He's a converted left winger. And I mean, I guess he's Newcastle are hoping that he's learned something from Marcus Alonso. So I guess out of all the people we've talked about, he'd be the most intriguing for me to add in draft leagues if I was in a 12-team league, simply because, you know, you would expect him to see some playing time for the rest of the season.
Yeah, that's a fair statement. It's just, again, it's kind of just like you're adding the best of the worst at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it with any confidence. And we've kind of got to that interesting point in the transfer window where it's really just clubs scrambling to get who they can to address what they need for, I guess, the least amount of money possible. As we noted, as the transfers we've talked about, the only one with a fee that was reported was the move by Brighton. So, I mean, I guess I like Kennedy just based from a potential standpoint and because I'm more familiar with him than the rest of these guys. I guess, would you say, I mean, I don't think it's going to help Newcastle stay up. Do you think this move is going to lead to more before the window closes? Or do you think this will be their biggest splash?
I think this is unfortunately it, which means it's not enough.
Yeah, the whole takeover talks have really stunted any, I guess, hoped resurgence we would have seen on Tyneside.
Yeah.
So, having talked about Kennedy, we're going to stick with Chelsea as we talk about some transfer rumors that have caught our eye. Chelsea's been linked with pretty much every center forward who's taller than 6'1 that has a pulse and has a driver's license. Chuck, where do we want to start? I mean, we've got Crouch, Dzeko are at the forefront, Carroll talks are off as he's going to be out for 3 months. I guess you want to lead us off before I guess we get into my manifesto on who I think they should sign?
I mean, I don't like any of the targets that they've actually been linked to. Like, Dzeko's intriguing, but way too expensive for what's supposedly a backup position.
Yeah, so I saw an interesting article on Sky Sports talking about how Chelsea are interested in Dzeko, and they're also interested in Emerson, and how Roma want a deal of in excess of $45 million for the pair. Now, if Dzeko was being brought in to be their premium, their starting center forward, I would be all in favor of this deal. However, he's coming in to play second fiddle to Alvaro Morata, and while I think Dzeko is equipped, just based upon how well he's played at Roma, to kind of be the feature threat, I don't see any reason why they would spend that much money, as you said. I think it's stupid, and I think it's what you wouldn't even consider a desperation move, because it's not like adding Dzeko and Emerson, for that matter, are going to close the gap between them and City in the league. More or less, I also don't think it wouldn't affect them in the Champions League.
Yeah, it's because, like, in Champions League, more likely than not, they're getting dumped out by Barca no matter what they do. And then in the Premier League, they kind of are what they are, and they're just hoping they don't fall out of the top four.
I mean, I think Dzeko is probably the most underrated center forward in Europe right now. He had the kind of, I guess you could call it, successful spell at Manchester City. He kind of predated their success, though. But since he's been at Roma, I mean, he's been absolutely lights out. And he torched Chelsea across both legs in the group stage.
Yeah, but if you're looking at Serie A and you want someone to sign that's not Belotti, then you're just going hands down for a Ciro Immobile.
But I think the thing with Dzeko that kind of gets lost is how clinical he is at completing what you want out of your center forward. And with the amount of balls that, you know, Chelsea generate from the wings, I think this move would have been awesome if they hadn't gone after Morata. But I just don't think there's a need to bring in for that much money, which is why I think they should go instead for my boy Peter Crouch, even though that sounds like crazy person talk.
Yeah, that's probably a fair assessment.
So just hear me out on the Peter Crouch thing. So you need a forward to be good in the air. Alonso, Aspilicueta, Victor Moses. You need a guy who's not going to care if he's not starting all the time. You're going to need spot starts for when Morata loses his cool or when Morata gets a nick. And you're going to need somebody who can be physical pretty much with a snap of the fingers, come in to get you those points towards the end of a match this season and make sure they stay in the top four, and pretty much throw caution to the wind in the Champions League if you need something. And I mean, that's pretty much the resume on Peter Crouch. That's what he does everywhere. He did it for England way back. He does it for Stoke now. I don't care how old he is. I mean, he's got the giraffe-like reach in the box. I think it's the perfect signing for them.
Yeah, Crouch is a very interesting signing for them, but it still just kind of feels like you're signing someone just for the sake of signing someone.
But in terms of Chelsea right now, with what Conte's done to the mental state of Michy Batshuayi and the fact that Conte might be out come the summer, I think that in terms of impact and your best bang for buck, it doesn't make sense to not sign Peter Crouch. Worst thing he does, he sits on the bench and he comes in a couple times, but they're better suited than having to play Eden Hazard out of his position.
Even though when they play Hazard out of his position, he does actually make the entire team much better.
Well, I do agree with that. And granted, I don't have any testimonial evidence to go off of, but I think that Hazard would prefer to play out wide rather than inside, as in like the false nine.
Yeah, I mean, he's not one to actually complain, so we'll never get a real answer on that.
I mean, just with the way the stuff works with Conte, I mean, you know, Chelsea want to keep Eden Hazard happy, and I could totally see a couple of years from now, if he does move to Real, you know, maybe next summer, or not this summer, following summer, something to do with, yeah, when I butted heads with Conte, it really turned me off to playing at Stamford Bridge, starting with being played as a false nine. Well, instead of spending, what, maybe 5, 7, 8 million pounds max to bring in Peter Crouch to have a like for like with Morata?
I mean, Conte will be gone anyway, so even if he butts heads with him, if he wants to stay, it'll be his team.
Another guy who the Sky Sports Mill has tossed around is Ashley Barnes. Essentially, like I said, they're looking for people who can legally work and reside in England, in the UK, who have a pulse and who are tall and can use their head. I mean, is there any forwards that they haven't been linked with that you think should be brought up that we should start a campaign for Chelsea to sign?
I mean, at this point, why aren't you talking about Benteke?
I was going to say, yeah. Who else there? I mean, I think Graziano Pelle still plays professional football somewhere.
One fun one, too, is Jozy Altidore.
Jozy Altidore. Yeah, at that point, they might as well bring in, who's the guy from, Alan Gordon. He used to pop up with goals all the time for the LA Galaxy. I'm sure he'd fit in real good under Conte's style play.
Hasn't he retired now?
I have no idea. I just don't understand the whole Chelsea thing. I mean, to think how they went from being in position to repeat the title to possibly signing Peter Crouch in the span of half a year is perplexing.
Well, welcome to the madhouse that is Chelsea Football Club.
Yeah. Speaking of madhouses, we're going to go over to the Emirates with, I guess, rumors that Aubameyang could be headed there, either in with a big money bid, potentially plus Giroud, or Giroud's going to be leaving if he does come in. I mean, do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, from a talent standpoint, obviously Aubameyang is an excellent striker. I think with the pace to be successful in the Premier League, I don't know if I like his fit there just under Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, I mean, I hate the fit. I struggle to see where he'd actually play because Wenger's not going to play a prototypical two up top. And Aubameyang is also not someone that's going to be in a floating role either. And he's also not very good on the wing. So unless you're just giving up on Lacazette, I can't see this move working at all.
Well, I know we talked about it a bit on our last transfer pod, but I think if Arsene Wenger is able to bring him in, your best bet would be playing him and Lacazette, even though he doesn't want to, through the middle, and then having Mkhitaryan sit in that floating role with Ozil, considering Mkhitaryan did have his best years at Dortmund when Aubameyang was there.
Yep, but while it makes sense, the chances of it happening are pretty low.
Well, yeah, as is tradition, if it makes sense to the general public, supporters, and analysts, then it's invalid in Arsene Wenger's mind. But nevertheless, I feel like we should talk about that a bit. Hypothetically speaking, Aubameyang comes in and he's in the starting 11 with Henry Mkhitaryan. Based off of that, are you trying to trade for Mkhitaryan right now?
I mean, I'd already be trying to trade for Mkhitaryan anyway, just because he's now actually a slightly useful player again.
I guess what would you, if you had to slap a price tag on Mkhitaryan for Taga, and I'm assuming you could maybe get this trade done in a 10-team league if somebody has him and he's expendable, what would you be willing to give up to get Henrik Mkhitaryan right now?
Probably like a midfielder three. Like, it'd be interesting to like try to trade like someone like Matt Ritchie for him.
Okay. Now, I guess if you're looking at where I think Mkhitaryan will finish in a perfect world, I mean, I do think he was going to end as a top 30 forward, especially if he only needs three or four really good games for Arsenal to do so. But I mean, if you look right now with the same points, I mean, he's got six more points than Tom Ince. So, I mean, you could definitely try and buy low on someone who's been frustrated by Mkhitaryan. But then again, I think you might have to pay a bit more. I think maybe you could get him for like a low-end midfielder too. I mean, would you consider trading Jesse Lingard for Henry Mkhitaryan?
I'd do it because I'd be, if Jesse Lingard's in my team, I'd be trying to sell him right now anyway.
Okay. Here's somebody. Who would you rather have from here on out? Juan Mata or Henrik Mkhitaryan?
Juan Mata.
Okay. Why? Because I was going to say Mkhitaryan.
Because now that Mata is actually performing extremely well from deep, I think he's almost undroppable in the United side right now.
So, well, I do agree from that, from a actual playing standpoint. I mean, if you look at Mata, outside of his two-goal game, I mean, he's only hit double digits once in his last five starts.
But consider that he's now assisting Alexis Sanchez, his value is shot up.
Yeah, but I still think that if I'm trading Mata for Mkhitaryan, it means that I have enough in my midfield where I can afford losing the potential assists from him and getting what would be, I mean, would you say Mkhitaryan's now what, the number three weapon on Arsenal behind Lacazette and Ozil?
Yeah, probably, but like, I'll take the number four, maybe five weapon on United over the number three weapon on Arsenal.
Okay, I guess I'm just looking from a potential standpoint and seeing I'd rather have the potential of Mkhitaryan with a punch shout at Aubameyang coming in and then taking him without Aubameyang if he doesn't come in, then Mata for the rest of the season. But I mean, as I said, that's the way I work. As you can tell from my column, you know, I always look for the most positively priced punt to look for. And I think in terms of what you're giving up to get, I think the potential outweighs it there. I mean, I don't think I'm too out there on left field on that one, do I?
I think it definitely is like a punt. I'd just rather look at what have you done for me now and what can you do with what's currently there? Because unless it's like a really, really likely transfer to get done, I can never take a potential transfer into account when making a deal.
Yeah, I mean it's putting a lot of marbles in Wenger's Wenger's basket, which has oftentimes burned the majority of people. But it's just something to consider if for some reason you've been offered Mkhitaryan and you have someone around, the region of the Lingard Mata value to trade. Now we're going to move to a little bit of a grab bag section, talking about transfer rumors. Jack Harrison, the standout youngster from NYCFC, has been linked with a move to Stoke City. I hate this completely.
Yeah, Harrison should not leave NYCFC right now. And if he does, Stoke City is probably like one of the last places he should go.
Yeah, so one of the nice things about having been to so many NYCFC matches as I've been to since their first season at Yankee Stadium was just getting to watch the development of Jack Harrison. And I mean, he's a Manchester United Academy product, came over to the States, go to college, and you could tell he kind of had the promise, and then he really broke out this season, got a great left foot on him. I mean, it's weird. He kind of reminds me, I guess, a little bit of how, the like Mighty Mouse attitude that Jiyrdan Shaqiri plays with. But still, I would hate to see him go to Stoke because unless he's going to go there and they're going to loan him right back out to NYCFC or another club where he's going to get a ton of time, he's just going to go and be a paperweight on their bench. And I mean, even though he would probably get a bunch of playing time and maybe even start if Stoke does get relegated this season, I mean, he's a budding talent. He's the first, guy from MLS to be called into any youth ranks of the England national team. I mean, I'd be heartbroken if he made this move to the Potters.
Yeah, and you're not the only one.
And that's the other thing too. I mean, don't come on, Paul Lambert, don't take him from us. I like watching him play live. Come on, he's one of the few exciting guys to watch up there with David Villa. I mean, is there any? I mean, would you see anything positive out of this move for him if it does happen?
I mean, the only thing that I could think that would be positive is if he's loaned out to a championship side after he comes in. But I'm not even sure if developing in the championship is that much better than developing in MLS.
Yeah, I mean, he's learning from Patrick Vieira, being coached by Patrick Vieira. He's every day he's playing with, working with near around David Villa. I mean,
He's
he's
played
got set
with Pierlo and Frank Lampard.
up. Actually saw Instagram this morning, Jack Harrison, Lampard. Jack was like, back to be on the pitch. Good to be back on the pitch. And Lampard commented, said, "You got megged awful easy in the first two sessions last week." And I just thought it was funny considering that you have two of, the guys who will go down as the biggest legends in central midfield in the past, 30, 40 years, and you got Jack Harrison, who in my hopes so one day does come back to Manchester United, but not now. I think he needs to learn, and I prefer to watch him live at Yankee Stadium than to think about him potentially moving to Stoke in what I think would be a mistake of a move.
Yeah, and I would also rather just make the trip up to New York to watch him rather than having to watch him on TV.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess with that, is there any other grab bag transfers we wanted to talk about? Anything that piqued your attention over the weekend?
Not really, because like Fred's potential move to Manchester City has come up, but like most likely, it's going to be too complicated to get done before the summer.
And I guess we'll tease this. We'll talk about it a bit more on our next episode when we preview the matches for game week 25. It appears coming out of West Ham, Marko Arnautović and Manuel Lanzini are both going to be out for at least a month. Andy Carroll is going to be on the shelf for probably 3 months. Is there anybody who you think would be a good signing for West Ham off the top of your head? And I guess factoring in that most likely Javier Hernandez and Diafara Sakho won't be moving anywhere before the window closes.
I mean, I guess you gotta try to find someone who can properly set up Chicharito because you really don't have a choice but to play him at this point, which means that long ball, like just throwing long balls into the box will not work. You actually need to keep the ball on the floor. The issue is those guys don't come cheap, and I don't really believe that West Ham has that much money to spend.
Yeah, I mean, given how David Moyes has operated in past windows, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of days there's at least one or two articles linking him with a move for maybe like Marouane Fellaini. But I don't know if United would be willing to let him go for the price that West Ham would want to pay for him.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I mean, Fellaini kind of offers the aerial presence. He's somewhat creative. I mean, he's got Premier League experience. He's very familiar with Moyes. So I guess that's why he comes to mind. And then I also forgot to mention Aaron Cresswell is looking at an injury too. So I don't know. They got a lot to figure out. I mean, they do have youngsters like Declan Rice and the guy they just brought back on loan from Borussia Mönchengladbach, Reece Oxford. So, I mean, they do have options at the back, but I mean, is there anyone else you were thinking of?
I've got nothing, but they need help and they need it bad.
All right. Well, with that said, that's going to do it for our most recent transfer special episode of FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth.
And we'll be coming back with the episode previewing the next round of matches. Remember, there's no matches this weekend. They'll be played midweek next week. So with that said, you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at Sean Sullivan, one. And you can find Chuck at Chuck Boo Sports. Till next time, best of luck and may your arrows be green.